Hello, and thank you for joining me for my biweekly podcast, Simply Tori. This is a platform where I discuss topics so I can learn and evolve, and hopefully you will too. As always, I'm trying new things, so today's show is with my business partner. It will be a conversation, but he'll also interview me a little too, so you can perhaps learn more about me. So let's get started. Today, our topic is creating your magic in the world. Dreams are real. I'd like to discuss being driven by passion and purpose, creating a legacy to leave your mark on the world, choosing wisely at a crossroads, and what it means to be a manifester. We'll also discuss our new storytelling company, as well as the power of doing what you desire, and more. I chose my guest today because together we are realizing dreams. We both have a desire to create a legacy and leave our mark on the world, as well as we learn from each other, push and encourage our way to catching our dreams on this new journey. So joining me to explore these themes, as well as some of his personal journey, is Patrick Anthony Howell, a well-respected visionary, author, poet, award-winning financier, successful entrepreneur and business leader with deep roots in the banking and finance industries. I'd like to share some of his bio so you can know a little more about him. So here goes. Power is as power does. Patrick is unyielding in his approach to life. As a 25-year veteran of Wall Street and finance, he has also been a successful entrepreneur, founder and executive director of the West Coast Wall Street Conference and Enlightened Billionaire Series. Since 2008, he and his groups have either produced or co-sponsored over 100 events in which nearly 300 micro-cap and middle-market companies have been exposed to over $5 billion funding pipeline in industries as diverse as real estate, oil and gas, information technology and mining, retail, and luxury. He is proud of his role in electing our president, Barack Obama, and helping to raise $1.5 million in Orange County, which has since gone from red to blue. And that's a big thing if you're not familiar with Orange County in Southern California. And then he's also a writer and author. His essays, short stories, and interviews have appeared in the Huffington Post, Los Angeles Review of Books, and dozens of international magazines. He has enjoyed the opportunity to interview Nnedi Okorafor, Ishmael Reed, and Nikki Giovanni. Patrick has been quoted and had appearances on NBC, BLK, Los Angeles Public Radio, specifically The Beautiful Struggle on 102.3 KJLH, San Diego Living, Equities.com, The Griot, and many media appearances as a podcast producer and editorial personality to discuss culture and finance and where they intersect. But bottom line, Patrick Anthony Howell is my business partner and a very good friend, and just an all-around bold, powerful, and interesting spirit. And I thank him for being with me today. Patrick Anthony Howell, are you there?
Hey,
how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday. I know you'd like to introduce me and get that going.
Yes, I am. I'm waiting to do so. Yeah.
I know. But first, I'd like to start with asking, since our topic is creating your magic in the world, I want to ask you, what is magic to you? And or what would you say your magic is?
Well, those are two different questions, so I'll take a stab at the first one. Which is what is magic in the world, which is the ability to be able to accept your talents, your abilities, your insights, your gifts, develop them, but then also work in concert with the universe and accepting its mysteries as they unfold before you. So I would think that that's probably the simplest definition. And I think some of the magic, to get to your second question, that I possess is the ability to be able to believe in people unlimited and have an unlimited ability to believe in the people that are around me. I think there's a lot of skepticism and I don't know, folks that have had interesting experiences as it were. And I think the ability to be able to look at people and see them at their best and be able to project that light without being foolish, without being naive, without being innocent, being grounded in reality, and create something from that is really a magical mm-hmm. ability. It's something that I enjoy and learned from one of my parents, in particular my mom. So I would say that that's maybe one of my magic abilities, but I think that I've got several of them.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Okay, well.
Okay.
I wanted to start with that.
Okay. I'd love to have the opportunity to be able to introduce you, having had the wonderful opportunity to be very well acquainted with you over the course of the last 24 months or so. Tori L.A. Reed, as I've dubbed you, is our tenured Hollywood producer and executive who has worked herself from production assistant to executive producer of Legacy of a People, a special documentary broadcast on the Eastern Seaboard, really celebrating the 400-year journey of a wonderfully creatively endowed people. She began her passion of film and the arts at Hampton University, a historically black college and university, where she received her BA in broadcast journalism and cinema studies. She is a second-generation Hollywood insider who has worked on film and television productions. She grew up and around and was exposed to a young Lenny Kravitz, was sung to on her 24th birthday by the legendary Richard Pryor, and even had an open mic session rhyming with Shaq in his Shaq L.A. heyday. She is also the proud daughter of a Christ-conscious Rita Reed and the iconic Hollywood sitcom master, Tim Reed. She is now CEO of Victory & Noble, a storytelling company, and my partner, looking to take a cue from her independent film auteur father and blaze a trail filled with purpose, passion, and fire. And the thing about Tori that I like the most is that she's really a good person. And when I say good, I mean that not only in the quality of her person, but also the level of her achievements as well as potential. In 1999, she was Miss Golden Globe Ambassador, an honor bestowed by the nominating committee to the son or daughter of a Hollywood luminary. She joined the children of Kevin Costner, Clint Eastwood, and Jamie Foxx. The 1999 Golden Globes, in which she worked with Lauren Bacall, Jack Nicholson, and Jim Carrey, was in fact the second highest watched in Golden Globes history, something that I think had to do with her and a lot of the support that I've seen on other social media phenomenon that she and her family engender in both West Virginia and the Hamptons, or Hampton University, some of the places that she's been. She has an extensive background producing events and films for Legacy Media Institute, the Film Bankers International, and she's worked with Blair Underwood Production Company and is really hitting her stride as a cultural influencer both in front and behind the camera. I've also had the pleasure of working with her on her Coming of Age, Coming of Spirit memoir, and she's a first-rate mind that I have dubbed the greatest memoirist of her generation.
Thank you for that. Well, it's interesting hearing yourself back to you. Let's start with how we initially met.
Mm-hmm.
We were part of Connie Briscoe, a New York Times best-selling author, and she had a beta format course called Craft Your Novel. It was an online mm-hmm. writer's craft workshop. And so you and I were two of, I don't know, maybe 20, 25, 30. And my cousin Corinne Dancy was a part of it. Was it a little
oh,
less?
Really?
Okay.
I didn't know Corinne was
Corinne. Yeah, Corinne was a part of that too. And so we met in that. I remember at the time our Southern Californian people were trying to form a group. And so we exchanged numbers, about four or five of us.
I remember. Yep.
And so we did that and stayed in contact. And then, of course, maybe by the third, fourth, fifth class, I realized this is fiction. I'm nonfiction. And so I remember shooting all of you a message saying I'm going to leave so I can finish working on my nonfiction book, and then you and I just kept in touch. I know you called me maybe a year.
I called you one Sunday morning. Yep.
Yeah. Yes, you did. Very, very, very early. And
well, I think it was like around 9 or 10 o'clock. I mean, it's early for Sunday morning.
No. Yeah. It was like six or seven. It was six or seven. I remember. And so I didn't even know who I was at that time. So, and you kept saying, "This is Patrick Howell." I'm like, "Who?" And so finally you were like,
I remember that
your
part,
book.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So you asked me, you know, where was I with the book? Had I finished? And at that time I had not. and you said, okay, let's get going. And you explained that that's what you do, and you've helped several authors get mm-hmm. their book published and out there.
Well, I think specifically, though, what inspired me is I was watching Oprah Super Soul Sunday, and Iyanna Vincent was on there with Oprah, and she was discussing her work. And she was talking something about you've got to be willing to look different, sound different, be different. She was talking about her philosophical approach about folks that have lived messy lives, but then, you know, realizing from kind of almost a very spiritual perspective that there's a bigger picture than yourself. And that reminded me specifically about some of the work that I'd seen from you. But then it also, you know, part of the reason why I'd reached out to you is because you had some very interesting, what I like to call the marketing assets. Where at the time I was doing a lot of interviews for the Huffington Post, and I saw photos like, you know, you up close and personal with President Barack Obama when, I don't know, maybe it was at his second or his first term, and then also with an older Richard Pryor and a very young Tory Reid. And just seeing those photos and saying, you know, a lot of times with the pieces that I was doing, I would select them based upon who I knew had social media currency or folks that I knew would be able to push the articles. And so I saw that you had some great photos, and I was like, these will go great, and so there was definitely a curiosity to find out more about you and what you were doing and that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Yes,
and then we met and we discussed it, and we have been pretty much on a love yourself through it journey.
And
we started last year. Yes, we started last year, and then I left to go to Virginia to work on my dad's project, Legacy of a People. And mm-hmm. then, of course, you were traveling all over the world and everything, and then we started back this January. And we're very close. We're very, very, very close with this book.
Well, I would love to have the opportunity to ask you the same question that you asked me. What do you consider magic to be? And what are some magical qualities, plural, that you possess?
I would say magic. I would say my magic is that I'm real. I'm genuine. I'm constantly working on myself and evolving, and I think that's very important in life.
Yes.
I've heard all of my life that I'm a good listener, so I'll throw that in the pot. But, you know, I care, I feel, I heal, and I believe what I have to say means something in this life. And so I'm speaking more and more and more, and eventually the book will be out, and I'll continue.
Yeah.
I do have a lot to say, and I've been very quiet.
Yes, you do.
But I'm finally trusting that, taking baby steps, saying a little bit more. So that is, I guess, what I would say my magic is. I think magic in the world, I think, is being. I think being magical and magic is your light, and being light, and a lot of people forget that, and a lot of, you know, bad things, negative things, just life, society, MSNBC, all these people screaming at you, it slowly tries to put out your light. And I think that being magical and magic in the world is that something that has to do with light workers, love, peace, all of those things, being fulfilled, people that are free, people that are being who they are. That's magical to me. And not getting caught up in, you know, what I should do, will I have to do this? It's hard. It's hard not to. God knows I've shoulda, woulda, coulda many years, but I am, I think, finally aware of my light, walking in my light, and I think that. So anyway, that to me is what magic is. It's being who you are. It's being true to yourself. It's being authentic. It's being free. It's the ability to just be, and find yourself. And it's, I think you mentioned my dad, and my dad is a very iconic leader. He's always ahead of his time, and he's legendary in his own right. And he's someone that is always doing groundbreaking things. You know.
Well, you noted just now light workers mm-hmm. and that kind of a thing. I was going to say that that was something that seems like it's very emblematic of the Reed tribe.
Yes, it is. My father is through artistic expression and just how he just is, just how he lives mm-hmm. life. My mom is a light worker because she's a light. She's, you know, everybody loves my mom. It's like everybody loves Raymond, everybody loves Rita. And so she's just this energy. Like whenever I'm with her, I'm like sitting there and she's like a ping pong ball and it's just so much energy and I'm trying to keep up with her. I really am. I really do. And so, you know, she's a light source, a light worker. And she's touched, I don't know how many children and she mentors and she builds.
She's an art teacher too, right?
Well, she's a developmental first grade teacher, and then mm-hmm. she just has, you know, mentees that she's worked with. But she's always worked with 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, which is right where you want to infuse a child, you know, with love, mm-hmm. with you're a champion, you can do it, be anything you want to be. All that positivity, she works with those children, and she's always getting cards and letters, graduation, high school graduation, college graduation invitations. With thanks and, you know, I remember you and you changed my life and, you know, so she's sowing mm-hmm. great seed. She really is. So, mm-hmm. Which is to me, again, it goes back to being magical. That's magical.
Yes, it is.
So, yeah. Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for that.
Question.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so, that's a little bit about magic. I think that you and I both agree that writing in and of itself is magic. So, you know, I can explain why I write, and I
yes.
suppose you'll ask me that. But I would love to understand a little bit more about why you write and why have you written all the years that you have? Because as far as I know, you've been writing back as far as elementary school. Why are you a writer? And then I would love to have the opportunity to answer that question as well.
This is funny. Okay. you said you wanted to interview me. Okay. Why I write. Writing for me is I express myself better on the page. And so it's comforting to me. I really am free when I write. It's been my air. It's been it's the way that I can just express. I can explore my mind, my heart, my spirit, my soul, like, and I can get it down on the page. I can express my fears and my thoughts and pretty much work through my journey. You know, my book itself, you know, it's really kind of an audit of my life, not fully, but a slice of it. And so,
you're writing, by the way, your book, cause I've had the opportunity to look at it and I've had the opportunity to read it and
give
readers for one another on our independent projects is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of a philosophical panache, and it's, you know, it's got all this philosophy, it's got this spiritual kind of self-activist, self-spiritual craft. And I said mm-hmm. in an article that I had written about you that it was reminiscent of Maya Angelou's, or Alice Walker's, yeah. We Are the Ones We Have Been Waiting For, and that kind of a thing. But I really think it's a hymnal for a new generation on how to live your life. I think there's a lot of amazing work that you do, not only on yourself, but in the writing. And, you know, it's an inspiration to read. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, I like to ask people a question, and I think it was a defining moment of sorts when in 2004 my brother's wife passed, and that just mm-hmm. rocked my family. And so during that time, I attended UCLA, and I went to a personal essay class and an autobiography into art class, and I just mm-hmm. was writing. I'm not one of those people that, you know, ever wanted to be a writer. A lot of people, like, on their bucket list, they're, you know, they want to write a book. That was never me, at least consciously. And so I went to these classes, and I always talk about this, it's in my book, but Philomene Long, who is now, she's the late Philomene Long, but this just wonderful, quirky, she's just this quirky, energetic spirit. And she, in the class, she asked her class, what is the wound that drives your life? And mm-hmm. I remember I asked Nikki Giovanni that.
Yes, I was trying to say
and
that.
And of
course. She said wound? Did you say wound? Yes.
Yes. Yes, she said W-O-U-N-D. No, W-O-U-N-D. She said, curiosity drives my life, which I'm like, God bless you. I got to learn from you. But at the time, this was, you know, 16 years ago. But at the time when I was asked that question and I wrote that answer down, that's when it became clear to me that I needed to write a book. And I realized what that wound was. And so, and I knew that what that was driving. It was the driving force, which I did not want it to drive my journey anymore. And so, so that for me at the time was a very pivotal question.
What I understand from what I understand of what you've been talking right now, and also, you know, in just looking at the work that you did, it was a way for you to heal. And that kind of reminds me a little bit. Yeah, Toni Morrison, in her own reading, she said there's no room for despair, no place for self-pity, no need for silence, no room for fear. We speak, we write, we do language. This is how civilizations heal. And so I think that even more so than the wound that drives you, I think it was the healing of the wound that drove you. Because I think love yourself through it, the memoir that I've read and the pages that I've read are healing. And I think that's a big part of who you are. I also think that's a huge part of what your magic is.
Thank you. Well, I think the book itself was, you know, basically a journey of turning lemons to lemonade, and it's the story of forgiveness, self being most important on that. But it's about reclaiming your power and your confidence after a harrowing experience, and all of us have those, and they're different for each person. And it's how we deal with it. So it is very intimate, very honest. And I hope that readers come away with, you know, wanting to become their highest self and to remember their light. And that when you are light, darkness is going to try to put that out. That is the number one purpose for darkness, is to put out light. So my hopeful belief or desire that women understand or are reminded that they're capable and significant and powerful and worthy. And so I like to say that the book asks the question, are you enough? And then reassures you, yes, you are. So that's what it is.
Well, I can't wait for it to come out. It's been a journey this year just working on it.
You've
submitted
gosh.
To agents. Publishers, independent publishers, we've been up, we've been down. We're just on the cusp right now of applying to literary agents over in London. And we've also thought of Paris, so still trying to work with those. But I'm looking forward to it being sold, and I'm looking forward to the world receiving your work. I think it's a gift.
Me too. I'm ready for it too. And since we're talking about my writing, one of the cool things about you when we first met and stuff, that the fact that we met was in the writing, but I don't have too many friends that are poets, you know, or authors. And so that was great for me just to be around that energy and that world. And so your book, The Integrated Book of Poetry Design, Yes We Be, was published last year and was debuted at the LA Times Festival of Books. And I was proud to be there and to support you on that. And then your latest creative nonfiction anthology, Dispatches from the Vanguard, will be published next summer. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about Dispatches from the Vanguard. I know there are four types of personalities, is it, in that book?
Well, Dispatches from the Vanguard is really about what I believe is the fifth estate of power. Everybody always talks about the three, executive, legislative, and judicial, that are within the American government. And then they say there's a fourth invisible province of power, which is that of journalism. And then I say that there's a fifth. I say that there is the creatives. And I say that for every Richard Milhouse Nixon, there's been a James Baldwin. Or for every William Jefferson Clinton, there's been a Maya Angelou. Or for every Jimmy Carter, there's been a Muhammad Ali. And that these folks are creatives in terms of their expression, their spiritual gifts, and that they really hold the hearts and they represent the spirits of people. And so rather than, you know, controlling by power, they control by their spiritual expression, they control by a charismatic energy. And so I broke down those different folks into different groups. I said that there are evangelists, there are prophets.
Mm-hmm.
Prophets are the sort of folks that speak a certain reality, and they bring it into reality by speaking it. So there was folks like, we've already spoken of Nikki Giovanni, also our good friend Dr. Michael Datcher, or the poet laureate of North Carolina, Jackie Shelton Green, people like Harry Edwards, who was the first one in the 1960s and 70s to mention sports sociology, something that has an immediate direct impact on our reality right now. You know, Muhammad Ali might have been emblematic of what sports sociology is, which the ability to be able to change societies through, you know, using a platform. But he was there when, you know, Tommy Smith and John Carlos rose their fists in the 1960s. And then as recently as the 2000s, he was a consultant with the 49ers, which also happened to be where Colin Kaepernick was seated. But if you ask him, as I did in an interview, he said that he didn't have anything to do with Colin Kaepernick. He said he's his own man. I just find it highly coincidental. Okay. So I say that folks like that are prophets. Mm-hmm. I say that there are evangelists who basically speak a good word. And you were mentioning MSNBC earlier in our conversation. That's not news. Evangelists speak a good word, something that, you know, gives the spirit flight or gives wings to the spirit so that it can take flight. And then I also mentioned seers, people that see.
Okay.
A future, people like Sophia Stewart, who is the author of The Matrix, and kind of, you know, Octavia Butler, people who sit there and see a future and then bring that future or bring a past into the present and project it for everybody to sit there and see clearly. And then the last group are manifestors, of which I noted entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs, folks that are kingmakers, people that are that make things, that put things together. So, you know, the four groups are prophets, evangelists, seers, and manifestors. And so that's what that book is all about. And it's been a pleasure. I mean, it's been basically about, you know, 4 years worth of interviews and talking, you know, folks like Ishmael Reed, talking with yourself, talking with people like the wonderful producer of this show, Celeste Duckworth.
Yes,
Darnell Moore, who you and I have spoken with, and just folks that are just doing great work during the course of this Donald Trump administration that restricts, that toxifies, that pollutes the human spirit. You know, how do people get by on a regular basis? What gives them, you know, what makes the voices of the unheard heard, both in the real presence right now and both within inside of the spiritual realm? And what makes those voices heard are the people that are basically open to all of that experience. And I think that that is somewhat, you know, a great part of magic. I think that when you can tune into other frequencies and not question it, not judge it, and allow yourself to be a conduit, which is what I think a lot of these creatives do. I think that they allow themselves to be a conduit for other people to sit there and see everything that is happening. Yeah, that's a little bit about what the book is all about.
So tell me this, because I know one of the things I want to talk about is a manifester, specifically in what it means to be a manifester. So I want to talk a little bit about that. Do you see yourself as a manifester? Or do you see yourself as something else in the...
Well, I would hope to end up as a prophet, because I have a vision that I really want manifested. I have a 13-year-old son whom I adore, and I never thought in my calculations... that are, you know, most of the time they're pretty accurate. You know, going back, you know, as a little kid, you know, in Sacramento, watching my father, you know, pull behind a police pulling over a black man. You know, I remember thinking to myself, well, I think this is probably going to end by the time I get older, having that calculation in my head for three reasons. But one of the reasons was that I just understood that racism and discrimination were really mindsets. And so I said, well, when that generation dies off, it'll be gone. And so, you know, just realizing that it's been introduced vitriolically for an entire new generation to embody just blows my mind. I think that's amazing. So I would love to be a prophet who could sit there and say that one day America will live to its highest ideas and racism can be eradicated or significantly eliminated within the society. I don't know if that can be, but that's one of the visions that I have. But no, I would consider myself specifically at this time and point, particularly as a businessman, an entrepreneur, a financier, a manifester. And so I'll read a definition from the book. I said manifestors make, they underwrite.
Oh, please.
Yes, yes. No.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Okay. Manifestors make, they underwrite, they create. They create the accoutrements, read magical things of a new age reality in a fashion that is absolute, loving, and magical. What they create moves, inspires, lifts the spirit higher. Madam C.J. Walker, Elon Musk, Dr. George Washington Carver are examples of current and past manifestors. These items are books, jewelry, shows, musical acts, comic books, and stores that seek to enliven, pick up, and inspire the human spirit. Some even create new ages with their good work. The items are taken from a glorious past and a powerful future and implemented in the here and now. Manifestors manifest a new age with their fresh good works. So, you know, it's anybody who creates. I mean, you know, like, it was a pleasure to interview Seven Bomar, who was a gentleman that I kind of researched, and I figured out that he had come up with the term resistance over 10 years ago. And then to understand that resistance was something that was frequently mentioned when people were talking about the resistance to, in 2016, to President Donald J. Trump. He was somebody that manifested a movement through, you know, a conscious act. I mean, it was a blog, but it eventually mm-hmm. became a clarion call for people that were pushing against, you know, what you were calling in this conversation, the darkness that was encroaching yeah. upon all the light that had occurred.
Yes.
So, yeah, yes.
But darkness has to exist so light can be, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You think?
Marriage of opposites.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
So,
I agree.
Okay. So, in order to be a manifester and to manifest, you have to be mm-hmm. driven, and that was one of the themes I wanted to play with, by passion and purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So, I want to say first, or want to ask you, what drives you, and what keeps you going on. You know, sometimes we have those days where it's like, yeah, I'd rather just kind of sit around and, you know, veg out or whatever. But what keeps you going, driven?
I mean, at this point, it's do or die. It's like, you know, I'm at a certain age in my life where the paid internship of working in corporate America and taking a check from them, for me, is over. I've got my paid MBA, or you can call it the School of Hard Knocks or whatever. But it's time to just be, and it's time to be precisely what you are. So, you know, it's, on the one hand, it's been hard. It's been difficult since 2016. And I remember having a conversation with Emmy producer Don Mizell and Jackie Shelton Green the day after Barack Obama was elected. And I remember mm-hmm. godmother Jackie Shelton Green, who's a poet laureate and one of my mentors, saying, well, this isn't nothing new. You know, we've been through so much worse than this. We've been through mm-hmm. civil rights. We've been through slavery. This is nothing. And so, you know, that kind of gave me like a really nice perspective on everything. And basically the thought that occurred to me is, it's always darkest before the dawn. And so before the really wonderful, incredible things happen, it's always the worst. And so that's kind of where
True.
I feel we are right now. I think that we've gone
okay.
through the worst of what America is, and I think that we see it clearly. I mean,
mm-hmm,
in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
during the Ronald Reagan administration, there was a thing where people used to say, you know, if you said, accuse somebody of racism, they said, well, you got a chip on your shoulder. Are you sure it's there or whatever? Now everybody sees it, clear as day. If you ever wondered how slavery could have existed, and you ever wondered about the nuance and the dichotomy in a personality like George Washington or Thomas Jefferson, now you know.
mm-hmm.
Now you understand
yeah.
exactly what that vulgarity was and exactly how that duplicity existed. And so it's really an opportunity for folks like you, for folks like me, to step forward and have a brand
mm-hmm.
new vision and have a new
yeah.
sensibility about things and move forward into that light. Because, you know, sometimes it's really hard. You know, things work together in a really incredible way. It's like, it's really difficult to, you know, contrast, there is no contrast. And so just as you were saying, darkness contrasts with the light, well, we have to mm-hmm. be at our darkest in order to sit there and create our lightest. And so I know any number of folks, as you do too, that are magical, that are amazing, that
yes.
have incredibly,
yes.
incredible visions that are organic to something that is light. And they're all around
mm-hmm.
us. And, you know, I always stop and think, you know, everybody that, you know, elected Barack Obama in 2007, in which there was a moment of incredible light, you know, at his
mm-hmm.
nomination.
And
also,
yes.
yeah, and it was there, and it was clear, and it was relevant. I mean, almost so much so that it just seems like it was like, you know, 100 years ago now. But It was real.
Mm-hmm.
So in that moment, those folks all put them in office. And so that moment's waiting for us again. We're waiting to sit there and get back to that moment. And, some things that are incredibly encouraging to me is I've never sat there and seen racist as loud and as vocal, but also as much a member of a minority class than they are right now. They're awful. they're very powerful, but at the same time, they're very weak in their pronouncements of, white power. It's like, well, if you're really powerful, you don't have to pronounce it.
It's interesting. You said they're the minority, but it's sometimes you forget that with all that you see, with all that you see on Instagram and of course the news, which I totally tuned out. But I see news headlines and everything, but it's really hard to remember that sometimes that is the minority, and there are people out there that are hopeful, that are doing things, and that are creating wonderful things, just have good spirits,
We're the majority.
Forget that.
I think we're the majority. Yeah. I think right now we're in a very negative cycle, but I think that America is very real.
Well, now I do want to take one step back and ask you, why do you write?
Aligned with Do or Die, it's just who I am. I've been writing and, been really good at creative expressions and creative expressioning since I was a kid. I remember my dad was a professor recently passed away, Dr. Bing Patrick Howell. He was a professor at Cosumnes River College when I was a kid. And he and my mom spent a tremendous amount of time with all six of us. There were six kids, and we all turned out to do pretty good, actually. My dad used to always say, man, I must be a genius. And I'm like, yeah, okay. they spent a lot of time with us. I remember, sitting down in my dad's classes and that kind of thing. And then that just rolled into, late nights with papers that I didn't mind writing for my English classes in junior high and high school and even elementary school. And just spending like 6 and 7 hours writing a paper and papers that would get me in trouble. Actually, I remember getting, B's on papers that were entitled The White Man's Assumption, Mr. Darling's class over at C.K. McClatchy, writing papers like that, getting a B on it, my dad reading the paper and saying, hey, man, that's a pretty good paper. And he was from Trinidad, so he had that accent. That's a pretty good paper. I said, most of the guys in my class can't write like that. He said, come on, let's go to the principal's office. And get dressed in his three-piece suit. And he'd have words, and he'd sit there and say, this is a great paper. Are you grading him on the quality of his writing? Are you grading him on the content of what he wrote that you don't agree with? I just recognized the power in being able to organize your thoughts and really sit down in a meditative space and really project something out in a very new way to the world. So I've just always loved it. I've been encouraged by both of my parents, both my mother and my father. My mother is incredibly, gracious, beautiful, just amazing spirit who's encouraged me in everything from the literary arts, music and writing and movies. Everything that I love that's creative, that's a creative endeavor, comes from my mom. So, I write just because that's who I am. I've got a lot of gifts at this time and point, creative financing, creative business development. These are skills that I've developed over a time. But if I could say that there's a skill that is emblematic of who I am, it's definitely writing. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I just love doing it.
Now, how did you go from Wall Street? You were on Wall Street. I know you are a brilliant financier. I want to talk about crossroads and choosing wisely and recognizing when you're at a crossroads. And I'm thinking you may have been at a crossroads as far as being a financier and then, being artistic, being a poet, being a writer. Was that ever a crossroads for you where you felt like you had to choose or you needed to choose?
Well, not in the negative way. I think in the affirmative, I needed to make a decision at a certain time point that I was going to be what I'm supposed to be and that the paid internship was done. You know, that's the way I always looked at working in corporate America, working for Fortune 500 companies like BNP Paribas, or working for Fleet Boston Financial, which was later acquired by Bank of the West, or by Bank of America, excuse me. The way I always looked at my work assignments as a branch manager, as a business banker, as an investment banker, was this is just a paid internship. And I did a lot of writing on the side, most of it not published. So I've got boxes filled with stuff that I was just working on. And I had a lot of, you know, failures in terms of that along the way where you'd submit to literary magazines, you wouldn't get accepted. And that's all a distant memory at this time point because this has been going on for me for about, what, since I was in my 20s. And that's almost 30 years now, where I've been writing and working in corporate America, and in my passion, who I am, is being expressed in my writing. And I would use, you know, my experiences in corporate America as a financier, as a Wall Street person, I would use that as fodder for my writing. So, you know, there was a positive affirmative decision to be made to say, well, I'm really going to jump into this lifestyle. And I'm really going to, you know, focus on creating product. I'm really going to focus on books getting out there in the world. I'm really going to focus on developing those relationships and having one foot inside of that world, but still maintaining the foot that I have inside of entrepreneurism, because that's a different form of creativity. You know, being a business creative, being able to put people together with resources together with and create things in reality that didn't exist prior to your imagination. And using that imagination actively. So, yeah, that was a conscious decision. So, I mean, I do think in terms of making dreams happen, I do think that in terms of being real and present, but living your dreams, I think that boldness is really important. Yes. I think that's a critical lever, or that's a critical modus operandi that I try to operate every day. And every week, definitely every week, maybe not every single day, but every week I'll do something that I just consider to be out in left field, but underpin it with, you know, certain charisma, certain style, certain panache. And the majority of the time, those things, you know, some version of them happen, and then it just blows your mind. So, you know, I would love to switch the conversation from myself. I'm talking, and talking a little bit about yourself. Yes, and talking a little bit about yourself and how you've been bold in your life, because I think that you have some things that are, I think you have some very unusual experiences. I mean, you know, from having the conversation that set you up to be Ms. Golden Globe, or to deciding that you were going to write your memoir, you know, or to, you know, producing Legacy of a People and working with your father on that project. As an executive producer, I think that you've been very bold, and I think that it's yielded some very interesting fruit for you as well. Would you agree?
I would, but I don't have I'm not at the boldness level that you are. Obviously, the Legacy of the People, working with my dad, that, you know, whenever I work with my dad, it's just a love project. He was executive producer. I was producer and writer on it. And we did what we do and had a great time. It was Trevon Facey, who was his partner and another producer and editor on the project. And that's just, you know, that's always love.
Well, then do this. Mm-hmm. Do this. Instead of talking about boldness, talk about dream catchers, because that's something that I started listening to from you that really caught my ear. And it's something that I think is indigenous of the Reed tribe. That I mentioned a little bit earlier. So what, you know, what is a dream catcher, and what is the Reed dream to be free? What does that mean?
I think the Reed dream to be free is being fulfilled. I'm finally on that path because I was busy healing and letting go. So I'm now finally on that path. My family definitely dreams big, dreams in HD. And for the most part, I think most of the dreams have been fulfilled for my parents. For myself, I'm working on it, but I'm so close.
And you are.
I will
You're very
be,
close.
Yes, I'm very, very close. But I think, you know, as far as the dream catcher, that's my dad has a book entitled Dream Catchers. He's a dream catcher. He's a dreamer. My mom's a dreamer. She's caught some dreams. You know, I am following suit like that little duckling behind them or beside them. And so, yeah, but it's like, for example, my dad being the head of the Reed family, you know, he built, and I think we said that in, or I used that example in the article that you wrote, but, mm-hmm. you know, Oscar Michaud, who in the early 1900s built the first black-owned film movie studio, which is a very difficult thing to do. I mean, think mm-hmm. about something difficult and go, it's past that. It's, you know, times 5,000. And so my dad did that, and he was second to Oscar Michaud. And
oh, wow.
I think that it's what?
Well,
that he was second to
Oscar
Michaud.
That's
yeah.
incredible
yeah,
accomplishment.
Oh, yeah. And of course,
that.
Tyler Perry is third. Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
This weekend. Yes.
Yeah. So it's, yeah. So I think it, you know, it takes risks, it takes sacrifice, which is certainly what my parents have done, and it's what you and I are currently doing with our company that we're forming, and so mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like I think for myself, you know, I've always been a dreamer, and you know, now it's time to fulfill those dreams. Now it's time to mm-hmm. have what I've been, you know, envisioning.
Do that.
And so yeah, so mm-hmm. to me, dreaming is very, very important. Because it's so easy to stay in a job and basically, you know, utilize all your time, energy with fulfilling the other person, whoever you're working for, their dream. That's why you're there. And it's very easy to do that and wind up staying in that for decades. And so, I don't know. I just think it's important to realize dreams, catch dreams, basically, in addition
okay.
to dreaming them. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I mean, I think that vision that you have, and particularly around storytelling and the art of communication and the ability to be able to project ourselves into the world at the highest possible frequency is what inspired us to create Victory & Noble, a storytelling company.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Before you,
because I'm excited about talking about Victory & Noble, but I was talking to my sister-in-law, Giselle, and she was telling me she was she was watching Jessica Lange on The View, and I'm a fan of Jessica Lange's work. And they were asking her, you know, do you have any regrets? And she basically said no. She said, no, not at all. She said, because, you know, when things come to me, opportunities, I'm always saying yes. She says, we need to say more, you know, there need to be more yeses than nos. And when she said that, when she was telling me this, and I have to go back and watch it, but I thought that was so important as far as, you know, helping to realize a dream. It is saying yes, and you mentioned the 1999 Miss Golden Globe, and that era, it was as my dad always says, doing, do. And so mm-hmm. it was being somewhere. It was making the decision to say, I'm going to go out and go here, and then being mm-hmm. there, I met the vice president of the Hollywood Foreign Press, Yanni Bagakis, who is also no longer with us, and he came over to me, and we just started having this conversation. And obviously, I made a very strong impression on him. And then weeks later, my manager is calling me saying, "You know, you've been chosen for Miss Golden Globe." I was like, "What? I didn't even know what that was. I had no idea the level." Of that whole adventure, and it was an adventure. It's like one minute I'm just decidingly, and that could have been a night I stayed home and watched a rerun of Frasier, but mm-hmm. instead I went to the screening and this happened, and then I'm in this 3-month whirlwind of being on Entertainment Tonight and Extra and CNN and all of this. It was just wonderful. So I just wanted to say that I'm focused on that and saying. Yes, a lot more, because mm-hmm. that's where the experiences come. And so back to what you were saying, you know, one of our conversations, you were like, you know, you said, Tori, why don't we, form a publishing production company. I know you're into film and TV. I'm literary in finance, and we come together. And I said, let me think about that. And it took me a long while to think about it, a month and a half or so. And but I said yes. And here we are, Victory and Noble, forming this storytelling company. And
yeah, so very basic level, like we're, yes.
Yeah, no.
Now, I was just saying, we're working on website development, company formation, that kind of a thing, and it's been interesting. I mean, the first year of formation has been really interesting, and then we're looking forward to next year, March 6th, at the Four Seasons Los Angeles Hotel in Beverly Hills, and be able to celebrate some of the folks that we've talked about in this conversation, but really creating the DNA of our firm and the relationships that we'll have going forward. And doing that, and so it's been interesting.
So
like
we're
for
creating.
Me, yes, we are creating, and we're manifesting and doing in real time. I mean, for me, it was an opportunity to be able to take all my years of experience in finance, and in that world and those relationships, and bring them to bear in something that I authentically care about with every iota of who I am, which is, you know, how we project ourselves on the screen. There's any number of, and to a certain extent, maybe that does have to do with how Black folks are awarded and celebrated in that community of Hollywood, but it also has to do with a greater vision that talks a little bit about, Hollywood is amazing, and it creates magic every day, and some of it is dark magic, and some of it is light magic, but, you know, when you see creations on an ongoing basis, as you and I were even just talking about, you know, a couple of days ago, that celebrate violence. Sometimes it has a place in cinema, but sometimes, you know, you're saying, why don't you project peace? Why don't you project you know, things that really inspire people to their highest self? And so being able to craft that kind of work, whether it's in a literary piece of work or whether it's in a film work, it's something that really drives me, and something where I'm willing to put everything to the center of the table and say, well, I'm all in. Let's do this and let's figure out how to make this a reality. Because when you see those things or those creations on the big screen, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It blows your mind, and it opens up a window in reality that allows things to happen. So,
for so many years with production companies. So I'm like, okay, I want to get back in a production company. So, what were you going to say?
Well, no, I was going to ask you. I was going to say, well, we've actually chosen a very special niche in terms of production companies to focus on. I was going to ask you to talk a little bit about that niche, but also talk about its importance in terms of who we are and what kind of projects we'll be, you know, looking for. You know, not so much, you know, some of the scripts that we've been looking at, but also more so thinking about, you know, projects that you've watched or seen or went to the movies or watched on Netflix over the years, and that you're like, well, this is emblematic of the kind of work that we're going to be doing. Or these are the films that I love.
Okay. No, that sounds good. Okay. Well, I want to say before I answer that question, I wanted to say to the listeners, if you have a comment, you want to jump into this conversation, give us a call. I think we have about 25 minutes left. If you have just want to, it's Q&A time. So the number is 646-668-2928, 646-668-2928. That gets you to us. Jump into the conversation. So I think that, you know, some of my favorite movies, because we've had that conversation, of course, The Godfather is the greatest movie of all time. It's life. It's just... Yeah, it's the I Ching, as Tom Hanks said in the movie.
Yep.
But The Godfather, City of God, Shawshank Redemption, Roman Holiday, One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest. These are the type of movies, my dad's movie, when we were colored. I think I would like to see us doing movies for the next generation. I have... so many ideas. Because of working so many years with my dad and having relationships with so many people around me that are producers, that are writers, that are DPs, that are wardrobe hair. It's like I've been in and around this community that I'm excited about producing some projects. And I'm excited about calling my dad saying, hey, Dad, because he's given me so many opportunities, you know. Mm-hmm. So we both want to, you know, promote, produce positivity, tell our stories. There's something special about telling our stories, us telling our own stories. You know what I mean?
Well, that's why Tyler Perry's studio grand opening yesterday was celebrated the way in which it was. It's an incredible accomplishment in America and for the world. Yeah,
that's true. That's true. But I mean, there have been some really wonderful movies in the last few years, as well as television. Mm-hmm. There's some great television right now, and documentaries. I have a love for documentaries. Always have. And so, I just look forward to doing that and just choosing
and
those
niche,
projects.
The niche is served really well by the example of The Godfather, because we're doing book-to-film adaptations. So that's
exactly.
The ultimate book-to-film adaptation of all time. It's also the first sequential movie. Mario Puzo, you know, created a lot of the material. The raw material that Francis Ford Coppola would use to sit there and craft into, you know, one of the best movies of the 20th century. And I think that there's already been a movie that's better in the 21st, even though most folks disagree with me. But book to film adaptation.
Yes.
Book to film adaptation
is
the niche that we're focusing on, just to, you know, really have a company that focuses on the gift of storytelling versus CGI versus stunts versus, you know, all this other stuff, to really just get down to that central practice of what makes a film, what makes a book great, which is the art form of telling a story. I'm really excited about it. Yes.
And thank you for pointing that out, because Godfather was a book. Shawshank Redemption was an essay. So then you asked me something else about Victory and Noble. Well, one of the things that we've done so far, I'll talk about that, as far as, you know, my dad always says content is king. And so the first thing that we have, we had the wonderful opportunity of interviewing Nikki Giovanni.
Mm-hmm.
And Trevon Facey, dad's partner, just a dear, dear person, my adopted brother. But he came with me, and basically he filmed it, was a cinematographer for it, and so we captured Nikki being Nikki. She is already your godmother. I was able to ask her if she would be my godmother, and we
she
just
said
had
yes.
a wonderful.
She said yes in the interview.
She said yes, she did, and we just had this wonderful conversation. I mean, we talked about Nikki is how do you describe her? She's fierce, she's funny, she's real, she's raw, and she's straight no chaser. And we spoke of everything from the current president to Serena Williams, to her love of Serena Williams, to her family, to her father. Very giving and revealing. And so we did that. That was the first thing, Victory and Noble.
And that'll be up and broadcast on the Los Angeles Review of Books later on this week, right? You finished producing that with William in the studio a couple weeks ago. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think that was an incredibly timely interview, because Nikki did something really cool and interesting in 2012 in interviewing, or not interviewing, but celebrating the life and times and the works of Toni Morrison. And I just see I saw a lot of timeliness, and you're heading out to Virginia this summer, Virginia Tech specifically, to go interview her, you know, it's arguably she's our greatest living poet. I mean, there's others that are out there, Sonia Sanchez, Dr. Hakeem Madhatiti, but Nikki Giovanni is very singular in terms of what she represents in the culture, in American culture, to our folk, and then also on a global stage, she might be the greatest living poet that we have right now.
Yeah. No, I agree. She is. She really, really is. Yes. Yes. So I wanted to ask you, and I know you've said this to me in the past, what is worth living and dying for? besides your son, who I know you adore,
mm-hmm.
and when it comes to your work, let's say.
Okay. What's worth living and dying for? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Would it be telling stories? Would it be, I don't know, expressing yourself maybe?
Well, I mean, in terms of my life, the things that are worth living and dying for, just to bring this conversation back to the beginning, is your dreams.
Yes.
I mean, you know, we're all put here for a divine purpose. And so I always think
mm-hmm.
it's interesting that folks will watch TV and watch, you know, get, you know, commercial advertisements from McDonald's or Starbucks or Coca-Cola, and then go out and go
mm-hmm.
buy McDonald's, Starbucks, or Coca-Cola because they saw a commercial. I'm like, your dreams are how God programs you. That's your purpose. And there
mm-hmm.
should be zero distance or zero that you're willing to do in order to accomplish that in any given moment. And I think
yes.
that also goes back to an earlier part of the conversation of just saying yes. You know, things will
mm-hmm.
present themselves in such a way to you, and you're so, you know, drugged up or drowned out by, you know, Fox News, MSNBC, CNBC, Donald Trump, blah, 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 that you're just listening to that, and you're not listening to
yeah.
that voice of clarity, which is really your spirit. Your spirit
yeah.
is communicating to you loud and clearly, and sometimes you can't believe your spirit because you're so programmed. You're so
mm-hmm.
programmed and you're
and
so
distracted.
Inundated with all of the noise. Yes. And so to me,
yeah.
that's worth living for. And then when I say worth living and dying for, I'm not, you know, by no stretch of the imagination am I a martyr. I'm in it to win it.
No.
But
yes,
it's just
yes.
having the intensity of that energy
yes.
at any given moment and saying, well, I'm willing to die for what I believe in. And I've
mm-hmm.
noticed that when I have that attitude in something, that whatever it is my will is focused on has a tendency of happening. When you
mm-hmm.
have the intensity of energy of, well, I'm either going to live or die for this. I mean, I don't want to die, but I am a pretty smart guy. And between living and dying, there's a lot of options that are available. And so when you have the intensity of that focus with purpose in an interaction or in doing something or completing a project or getting a deal done, I notice that for me, 90-something% of the time, it happens. And
mm-hmm.
it's just, you know, and it could seem crazy to you yourself in terms of, you know, how things are turning out, or it could seem crazy to everybody else that's around you. You know, as long as you believe in what you're doing and you see what you're doing and you see it with clarity inside of your mind, even if it doesn't exist anywhere else except inside of your mind, and this is something
mm-hmm.
that you're supposed to do, and you feel that energy between your mind, your heart, and you just feel that, you know, that rush, that anxiety, that
yeah.
that energy, that adrenaline rush, and you know, that's act on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where a lot of my boldness comes from. You know, like, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you and I were at the Four Seasons, getting ready or prepared for the event, working with the staff over there, and then just seeing George R.R. Martin as clear as day, and being like,
yes.
that's insane. And walking up to him.
Tell the listeners who he is. They may not
yeah,
know.
Well, George R.R. Martin is the creator of Game of Thrones, and the producer
mm-hmm.
of that show. And, you know, by my intention, you know, we're a storytelling company that focuses on book-to-film adaptation. I'm like, book-to-film adaptation? I'm like, that is probably the emblematic person of book-to-film adaptation at this time point in American culture. Because he had a number of books, Game of Thrones, that was, you know, that was defining the culture. And he's at the height of his power and his ability. So we had a great conversation about Nnedi Okorafor, who is a really incredible writer of science fiction, who is emerging inside of the culture
mm-hmm.
along with so many others. You know, it was something that he told me to, you know, he says, that sounds great. He says, you know, give my offices a call. And I called him a couple of weeks later, and, you know, we're hoping that he'll be participating inside of our event. But, you know, in that moment, to be able to see him and just be calm and say, oh, yeah,
yeah.
Let me go talk to him about Nnedi Okorafor and what we're doing. There's a certain
yeah.
amount of boldness and also manifesting inside of that. And those type of things happen. Like, the more you open up your mind and, as you said earlier in the conversation, say yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more that you attend to that voice, that you know, your spirit, the more you listen to your
yeah.
spirit versus listening to everything
yeah.
and everyone else that is around you, the more you find that, you know, quote unquote serendipity lines itself up with you, and things that
mm-hmm.
you never thought would happen are happening clear as day, inside of the here
yeah.
and now. So yes. Did I answer your question?
Well, yeah, you did.
Okay.
Well, I want to say, last question I have for you. Success. Let's talk about success. I asked on my last show with Stereo Mixtrumental, I asked him, it really was. I asked him what you think the secret of success is. So I'd like to ask you that, being a successful businessman and entrepreneur. What do you think the secret of success is?
I mean, at this time point, and you know, it's different things at different times. I mean, definitely don't follow the zeitgeist of American culture in order to figure out what success is, because Donald Trump is a highly successful person. you know, at least by, you know, American typical standards, and we're in a period of flux. I think that success to me is just authenticity at this time point for me. It's being precisely who I am and not being afraid to be that. There's so many decisions that come into play during the week. There's so many, you know, things that are outside of the quote unquote norm. And sometimes you just have to say, well, I'm just going to be me and I'm just going to do this. And the results of what come with that are incredible. If you know how to push past, you know, your fear space to just, you know, it doesn't mean you're not going to be afraid. It doesn't mean you're not going to be terrified. It doesn't mean you're not going to be nervous. It doesn't mean you're not going to be scared. It means just to push through it and do what it is, you know, you need to do, or what you want to do, or what you're supposed to do, and just do that thing. So I think authenticity. So, I mean, I would ask you the same thing. What's your definition of success?
I would say fulfillment. I would say somebody can be successful sitting on a beach selling, I don't know, sunglasses in a hut, and live. If that person is fulfilled, then that's success for them. I think it's based on every individual and what's in their heart, whatever their desires are. So I think it's, you know, fulfilling what you desire, fulfilling that dream. Back to catching dreams. I think that's what success is. I did get a question. I was sent a question. What advice would you give new and emerging storytellers?
That the world is only told like, you know, everybody's focused on Hollywood as the dominant storytelling machine, which it is. It's the collective imagination of all of us that tells us who we are and reflects us back to us. That less than 5% of the stories have been told. So, you know, Toni Morrison, who is an incredible inspiration and told that book, Beloved, the one that won her acclaim, rightly so. I mean, she blew the lid off of what a story could be and could not be with telling that story, Beloved. I remember just, you know, you and I were talking about it, and I remember being back at Cal Berkeley and just, you know, the first two lines of that story, I think it was 124, was full of a baby's venom or something, and I was like, oh, no. Not going to do this. Because I immediately felt the suck. I felt like this is what storytelling is. You know, it's the ability to be able to channel energies, spirits, places, different dimensions, and then project that out. And then in doing that, open up different realms of possibilities inside of people's minds and what can be created in real time. So my advice to anybody who's writing is, you know, tell your story and don't be afraid, and be... be, you know, adventurous, be like fearless in saying what you want to say and how you want to say it, because there's so many different formats. Even some of the filmmakers that, you know, seeing that your dad's been working with over in Ethiopia and also Nigeria, like some of the 3D virtual reality films that they're making on the continent right now, that's fearless filmaking. That's filmmaking that will define us for like the next 100 years. And it's being done right now. Yes. So I think that answers the question in part. Be fearless, and also don't be stopped. Like there'll be a lot of energies and a lot of entities that want to stop you. And so, you know me, my thing is always, you know, with you is, you know, you didn't make me, so you can't tell me to stop. It's like the only one that can tell me to stop is the universe, and the universe ain't telling me that. So there'll be a lot of people that say no, that have opinions, maybe you should do this, you should do that. And just push your story out there. Because like I said, I think only 7% to 5% of the stories have been told. And I think that there's a bunch of new realities that are waiting to explode. So I'm excited about, you know, a lot of the storytellers that are out there, including you and including myself, including Celeste Vertical, who's producing this show right now and giving us a platform and a voice to speak. That would be my advice. Don't be stopped, and be fearless in telling your story. Tell the new vision, and don't be afraid of that vision.
Yes, yes. Well, if my listeners would like to follow Patrick Anthony Howe, you can follow him on IG at Banker Author Visionary, or on Facebook under Patrick Anthony. If you want to keep up with him, that's where you can find him. What can I end it on? Let's see.
Well, we're talking about dreams. Yes.
Yes. What were you going to say?
I don't know. I was going to invent something, but I was going to invent it, and I was going to say, well, we're talking about dream. We're talking about dream manifesting in reality. I don't know. Maybe we could talk about. I was going to invent it.
I had what I wanted to ask you. What would you? Because I love hearing people's answers. What would you tell your 13-year-old self?
Okay. I mean, that's kind of a really interesting question because I have a 13-year-old son. It's what do I tell him? He's a very different personality from what my personality was, but he gives me a reference point to think about where was I when I was in seventh grade and that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of time spent in, you know, bedrooms, sitting down, looking at ceilings and wondering what's going to be. And number one, you're going to be some version of the incredible version of what you have of yourself. So just relax. That's going to happen. Also you will leave the house. There's a lot of rules and regulations involved with having a Trinidadian father who's a professor and being the oldest out of six boys and girls and just feeling like all that structure around you and understanding that, just enjoy the moment, enjoy where you are right now and don't project so far out into the future. It's all coming, everything that you want to do, but also, you know, talking to my 13-year-old son, which you did not ask, but I'm thinking about that specifically. You know, it's such a shame to have the vitriol of today's world introduced to a brand new generation rather than, you know, going away as it seemed like it could inside of 2007 with the election of Barack Obama. And the thing that I always tell him is, you know, don't forget the dreams that you've had. Like a lot of what you're experiencing right now in the mainstream press and hearing from the president and hearing from all these talking heads, don't forget the visions that you have for peace. I think that those things are possible. Yeah. I think that those things are entirely possible. And like I said, it's always darkness before the dawn. So, you know, I would encourage a 13-year-old in today's world to just say, well, I really want to work for something that's very different from everything that's being expressed and to do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think we have a call holding.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think so. I think we have two, but I don't know if we lost them.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Hello. Yes.
My name is Lee, and my question is threefold. One, you were talking.
Hi, Lee.
Hi. You were talking about being a manifester, and I'm wondering what your parents did to release the manifester in you, develop it, nurture it, and what you're doing as a parent. That you think that you would mimic their technique of doing that, or that you think they overlooked when they were raising you. And then as for the company you're developing, what are you hoping that the next generation will get from the stories that you leave behind for them? If you could speak to
that. Great questions.
Mm-hmm. I want to let Tori go.
Oh, no, I want you to answer the first one.
Okay.
I mean,
Lee,
I mean,
how
I
you
can
doing?
Answer it. I think it's been better for you. Let me answer the first one because you wanted me to do it. So I think that, I mean, I don't have a child, of course, but I do have nieces and a nephew. I think both of my parents taught me and desired me to be happy. So I think they want me to trust myself, trust my instinct, listen to my instinct, go for it, live my dreams, never give up. These are, I guess, basic but very important ways to live your life. That's what I would say quickly, but I know this question was for Patrick. So, okay, Patrick, you're
right. Well, I wanted to answer another one of Lee's questions, which is, you know, what are we going to do with our storytelling company? And I was just thinking about a portion of our mission statement, which states that we are storytellers manifesting new and ancient stories for the brilliant new age. So to really just tell, you know, as many as we can, many of the stories, whether it's fiction, nonfiction, whether it's documentary, whether it's podcast, whether it's feature film, whether it's being a co-producer on a feature film, and just getting stories out that lift up the human spirit and tell, you know, in some way, shape, or form, a story of light. You know, there's a lot of, you know, stories that are out there that, you know, I don't want to mention them specifically on this conversation, but, you know, they're great. They're great stories. I mean, they're really great filmmaking, but, you know, they kind of leave you in a very interesting place, to put it differently. So I would say that that's part of our mission with Victory and Noble.
I really want to answer the first question she asked.
So the first question pertaining to, manifesting and what do you do in order to create a manifester with a child, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So for my 13-year-old son, I mean, it's a dance. I mean, sometimes you're providing structure, and sometimes you have to leave all the structure alone. Sometimes I'm telling him what to do, and sometimes I'm letting him tell me what to do or what he wants to do and what he sees. Even today, we were just working on an assignment, and we do these type of projects all the time, launching rockets into the stratosphere or, you know, working with him on his swimming and what he sees for himself and what can happen, what the different possibilities are. And like I said, it's a dance. But, you know, for me, the first thing is just having an absolute respect for that spirit from the get-go, from day number one, and saying, this isn't a baby, even though it is a baby. This isn't somebody that needs to be taught things. I can learn as much from him and his development and his spirit and his journey as he can learn from me. So on the one hand, there's that parent relationship, that parent-child relationship. But on the other hand, to really respect that this spirit is coming from another place, and that the spirit is already formed, and it already knows what it's doing, and to just listen to that spirit. So, you know, I have that with him, and I think, you know, we're gonna continue along that line. So I hope that answered your question, Lee.
You absolutely did, and I was glad to hear you say respect the spirit. I was also glad
yes.
to hear uplift and positivity in terms of the kinds of films you want to leave behind. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Okay,
thank
wonderful
you.
To hear your voice, Lee. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
What a great voice.
Mm-hmm.
So any lasting advice, we'll wrap. Any lasting advice, any wisdom for people who are feeling perhaps lost or trying to manifest their dreams? What would you say to them?
It's always darkest before the dawn. That's a fact. That's a fact that I ran into so many times in my life. So just when you feel like your hope is being extinguished, go the next mile or go the next step. And sometimes, you know, it's good enough just to take one step at a time. But when you're working with inside of your purpose, anything is possible. And you'll see things mm-hmm. happen from one moment to the next. I mean, I've had my darkest moments lead up to, you know, pure epiphany. And, you know, it's the times in which I acknowledge that I'm not running my life, that I'm not, you know, I'm not the one who's in control, in which, you know, I'm humbled, basically, before the universe, and just start putting one foot in front of the other. Those are the moments in which everything happens. So that would be my advice. But what would be your advice?
I would say do what makes you happy. Don't listen to the world. Listen, just keep listening to your inner voice. Yeah, I would say take risks, take chances. And the big one is it's okay to make mistakes. That has been, you know, one of the reasons why I haven't taken as many risks up until this point is because it's fear of making mistakes. And I had great, great advice from a dear friend, and she said, it's okay to make mistakes. You just don't want to make the same mistake over and over and over again. You know what I mean? Hmm. But it's okay to make mistakes. So that's what I would say. Yeah.
Also to just dovetail off of that, Prince said in his song, if the elevator breaks down, go crazy, right?
Yes. Yes, when all else fails. Our favorite Prince. Well, Patrick, thank you so much for being with me
today.
Tori,
it's been a pleasure. Yes.
Yes, this has been pleasurable and full of genuine energy, as I knew it would be. There's nothing like great friendships to help you fulfill your dreams, and you are definitely one of those friends. Shout out
Thank
to
you.
Great friends, absolutely, to great friends and family who have your back in this world. Mm-hmm. I always say you need your tribe. It makes all the difference in the world. Thank you to my listeners for hanging with us. Join me in 2 weeks on Sunday, October the 20th, as we'll keep the inspiration, the insight, and energetic conversations coming. So stay tuned. Until then, continue to create your magic in this world by realizing your dreams.